WildTalkRadio.com.
Theme song!
This is the Firefly Funhouse! And I want to introduce you to some very special friends that I met along the way.
This is PC3.
Hey, this is Max Fran, King Robert from the Royals.
This is the undisputed future Seth Rollins.
Hey, this is Kane from WWE.
Hello, this is WWE Hall of Famer, the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels.
I'm Bristol.
And I'm Aubrey from ATTV Flipper Flop Vegas.
Hi, this is Bree.
And this is Nikki, and we're the Bella Twins.
Yes, this is Broken, not Hardy.
The greatest man that ever lived. Always likes a good rant.
Hi,
and you're listening to the greatest rant.
Satisfaction is guaranteed.
It's time to experience the award-winning The Rack.
Fly, my pretties, fly.
I love kickball.
I'm back, taking souls and digging holes.
I'm gonna break you, bitch, you hear me?
With your host.
They've been lying to you. Heroes don't exist. Y'all become addicted to the illusion of what a hero does for you. Have I mentioned that I was once addicted to eating sponges?
Lindsay Ward.
Look at me, woman.
And you can just call me Taker.
Oh my God, it's Taker. Taker, Taker, Taker. Does Taker hate me? Oh my God, it's Taker.
And she was a wicked, wicked child who spat and swore and chewed tobacco.
I like puppets.
Stickers! And her producer, Sir Rocket.
My little creatures of the night will now experience the magical art of puppetry.
This right here means I'm the champ that runs the camp.
Live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
We're here.
Yowie wowie!
Everyone, welcome to a special edition of The Rack right here on WildTalkRadio.com, brought to you by our friends over at MBG Films. Check them out, youtube.com/MBG1211. And if you're listening to us over on WildTalkRadio.com, RackRadioShow.com, or directly on Twitch, thank you so much for tuning in. We greatly appreciate it. If you get a quick second, just like and subscribe to this channel. And you know what? You can subscribe for free using Twitch Prime. All you have to do is click the little purple heart above the screen, and well, if you have a Twitch Prime sub available, you can use it here. Or if you don't, you can use a regular sub. We wouldn't mind that. But if you don't want to, that's fine too. We understand. And if you just happen to be in a following mood, well, you can go over to twitch.tv/LinsWard, LinsWard, which is my channel, and you can follow over there because I'm trying to get to affiliate. Please follow me. I want to use my fish butt emote. You don't understand. I'm your host, Lindsay Ward. Joining me, as always, is the ever-faithful producer slash co-host slash handyman, Sir Rockin.
What are we doing here? What?
I don't know. You're driving. One of us has to pay attention.
Oh, right. We're live. It's Thursday night. We're doing WrestleMania Day 2 because...
Thursday, dude.
I know it's not Thursday. Did I say Thursday?
You said Thursday. It's Tuesday.
We're live. It's a Tuesday. You know what that
means.
It's
one of those days that starts with T.
We're here to talk about WrestleMania because it's too big for just one night. Too big for just one show. And she talked me into it.
So, okay. So the reason why we're doing this, and we've kind of already explained this, but just in case anybody hasn't heard it, is because we went 3 hours on the full show last week.
Three and a half,
we decided let's just split WrestleMania out in its own show because there's stuff that we want to talk about on Thursday that we don't want to be rushed to talk about because we have to get through 8 matches of WrestleMania and there is a crap ton to unpack from this one. So we're like, screw it, we're just going to go live and we're going to talk about it. And also, I really just want to talk about this WrestleMania because I love the shit out of this show and I've just been like... She's ready to talk about it.
She's been buzzing since it ended. Couple things. One, we also went 2.5 hours on Saturday night to recap day one. So we've already done 2.5 hours of a WrestleMania review. So this is the back half for day two. You can tweet us at Wild Talk Radio, at Rock Radio Show, and Lynn's Ward. Or go to wildtalkradio.com, rockradioshow.com, or twitch.tv/WTRLive, and you can participate in the chat. Don't be afraid to chat, even if you disagree with our opinions.
Yeah, so we are going to open... Matt, we're looking at you.
Matt. Calling him out. Calling you out, Matt. Anyway.
We know you can... We can trust you. You're fine. We're going to start with the Firefly Funhouse. We are going to talk about that first, because that is the most to unpack. And when I tell you there's a lot there, we sat here last night and we took notes on it. And we tried to grab every reference, every little detail, everything, and I'm sure we missed stuff, from that. I don't even want to call it a match, because it really wasn't really a match. It was an experience that we could get.
Yeah, we did film study, chat. We did film study. We went through this piece by piece by piece. We paused, rewound to make sure we caught everything. We had many discussions. We did full-on film study. This is the effort you get on the rack on a Tuesday.
Because we have to talk about it. So, without further ado, let's jump right into our WrestleMania recap, brought to you by our friends over at mbgfilmsyoutube.com/mbg1211. And just to make it perfectly clear, we are talking about the Funhouse first. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to talk about everybody else. But the Funhouse gets its own segment because reasons.
Because, simply put,
you can look, but you can't touch.
I just don't even with that. So, all right. So, this match fell as the second to last...
Experience?
Sorry. This experience fell as the second to last
event.
Item.
Event.
Whatever. On the card. Followed only by the world title match. And I don't know if that was the best decision, but having seen it, I don't know where else you could have put that.
I do.
The end?
The end.
But then we wouldn't have gotten Titus face.
You could have ended the show on Titus face.
You could have. I mean, you really could have.
I mean,
but
imagine WrestleMania ends with Titus O'Neil's face.
Stunned. Shocked. Unable to process, where he just closes WrestleMania where it with... I don't know what I just saw. I'm out.
Yeah.
And that's the end of WrestleMania. But no, Drew McIntyre deserves to close WrestleMania. But this was the second to last on the card. We'll talk about what this did to the title match when we get there. But yeah. So this match opens with John Cena coming out.
So first reaction was, wait, what?
Yeah. Going into this, especially after the Boneyard match, nobody really knew what to expect. There were no rumors, there were no leaks, there was no nothing surrounding this. We just knew that this was going to be messed up because it's Bray Wyatt, right? So we don't know. We just don't know. And this match experience, whatever. I'm just going to keep calling it a match because that's all I know to do. But it was really an experience. Was unlike, I feel like, anything we've ever seen. I'm just going to put it like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we open in the arena. John Cena comes out. He comes out to no crowd.
He's waiting, looking for his boos. He's looking for his cheers. They're not there. And he's like, what am I supposed to do? Well, I don't know. What am I supposed to do? He looks at the camera guy, and what am I supposed to do? And he does the only thing he knows how to do. Say, welcome to WrestleMania. And it all went downhill from there.
Except as John's saying, welcome to WrestleMania, we get a messed up little video package cutting back and forth between Mean Gene Okerlund and Vince McMahon saying, welcome to WrestleMania, with Twisted Dark Omens mixed into it.
Oh, yeah.
And then we cut to the Funhouse with Bray. Looking his most innocent and non-murderous. And he has an opening monologue for this match, where he gets deep.
He does. He really gets deep in the thought on this one.
So, he goes into his conspiracy theories, complete with alien music, that another world exists, where our deepest, darkest desires are no longer secret. Gods, angels, demons, and monsters are neighbors. And we flash to what I'm assuming is Satan holding a sheet full of cartoon images of gods, angels, demons, and monsters.
And by the way, if you look at the Satan, the ears on the Satan were the one look like the ones you would have on Devil Vince.
So maybe
I'm just pointing out, maybe Vince McMahon is Satan. I'm just throwing it out there. Chat, I don't know.
How many subtle references can you get away with before you piss off your boss? Who knows?
How much can you get away with? It's just a thought. It's just a thought I throw out there. Anyway, continue on.
So in this experience, we're going to get to know John Cena.
We're going
to
get deep inside John Cena. Know his thoughts, his wants, his desires, and all the things that have ever hurt him.
And John has to face his most dangerous opponent.
God?
Himself.
Oh, because remember Sean had to face God?
Yeah.
That was an experience, too.
That was a thing that happened. Thankfully, it only happened once.
Tangent. First tangent of the night. Imagine if they put Sean and Vince and God in this type of video type thing.
Oh, God.
And that's how he would fight God. They could never get away with it, but imagine what it would look like.
No.
Yeah. Chat, Matt, imagine. Imagine. All right. Back off tangent.
So Bray says, "Welcome to the Firefly Funhouse," and he disappears behind the door, exiting the funhouse. And John is teleported to the magical world of Bray Wyatt. He's in the funhouse, and he's surrounded by Abby and Mercy's box. There's no Huskus.
No Huskus. But there was Mercy's box, and the cardboard cut out of Bray.
And the cut in half.
What was left of the cutout?
Yeah.
Bray went psycho on it in one of the segments originally.
The very first one. He cut it in half.
Yeah, by the way, it was the original set.
Yeah, this was the original set with the original props. So we're believing, just based on everything that happened in this match, that this was possibly shot in Stanford. But I'm not ruling out the possibility that they threw a bunch of crap on a truck and they sent it down.
I think they just went to Stanford and went right around the warehouse and went, "I want this and this and this and this and this and this."
Which, if there is, I want video of it. But anyway, so John is looking around. He's nervous. He's not liking what he's seeing. He's a little scared. And then a beacon of light, a beacon of hope, our sweet prince, Ramblin' Rabbit, pops up from behind the TV, and he's so happy John's here. He's so excited, and he asks John, "You looking for Bray, dude?" "Yeah, I saw him. He went that way."
"He went that way. He went that way. He went that way. Through the door. That way. That way." I love the rabbit.
I love Ramblin' so much. And the last words from Ramblin' Rabbit to John Cena are, "Be careful, dude.
Careful, dude."
So John walks into the darkness outside the funhouse. And we have to say that, honestly, this kind of... I know a lot of people, I think, are comparing this part or a lot of this to the final deletion. I would say that this part right here more reminded me of the Edge and Christian show.
Yes, watching it was like... Because I've watched almost every episode of the Edge and Christian show that totally reeks of awesomeness. It's all available on the WWE Network. Like, this part of the segment was shot exactly like one of the scenes they did in the past. Like, completely in the dark, type of camera, straightforward. Like, it came right out of the Edge and Christian show. Anyway, continue.
So John's in the dark. He's looking around. We have ominous music. And then out of nowhere...
Dun, dun, dun.
We get the boss puppet. He pops up and he starts to poke John about his lack of ruthless aggression, and essentially we get a repeat of Vince's promo where he's poking at John.
It wasn't poking at John. The promo he was cutting was the promo he cut on Raw to all the superstars. This was the day before Cena got called up, where he's looking for, "I'm looking for someone with ruthless aggression. Who's it gonna be?" That was the promo.
And Vince tells Cena to step it up, or he's fired. Mm-hmm. Which, I have to say this, Bray does all the voices for the puppet. He does a fucking killer Vince impression.
He does.
I mean, he got it, like, bought on. Like, I was sitting here, I've watched this thing like 4 times now, and it's like, are we sure that's not Vince? Like, are we positive they didn't get Vince to do this?
Or positive, because you can hear his voice.
Yeah, you can hear Bray's voice. But it's just like, it's a really, really good impression of Vince, so props to him. Ash, the rabbit did not die in this. That's the one thing that did not happen, is the rabbit did not die. He died for this, but not during this. So, we cut to the ring, to John Cena's debut, where Bray is Kurt Angle. He's not in the singlet, but he cuts the same promo as Angle when he's issuing the open challenge. Who's man enough to stand toe-to-toe with Bray Wyatt?
But imagine Kurt Angle, or Bray Wyatt and Kurt Angle singlet. Imagine. That would have been hysterical.
Oh, it would have been hilarious, but I don't think that would have happened. Side note, I love that they found Bray jeans that, like, made him look like he had an ass. I had to kind of laugh at that a little bit. Like, they finally found him some that, like, actually fit his non-existent butt.
So he's cutting the Kurt Angle promo to word for word, just replacing Kurt Angle with Bray Wyatt. Then you hear the generic music play, and it's John Cena in his old tights running by the fist, the SmackDown fist.
The giant SmackDown fist. Like, the internet pops so hard for the fist. We're like, oh my god, there it is!
Because if you remember back when SmackDown Live came back, it was in the intro. Mm-hmm. When they went live with SmackDown. It's like, everyone was wanting the fist to come back on the new set. It did not. But it was like, oh god, there's the fist. And so everyone loves a good fisting if you're a WWE fan.
Yep, we're all about the fisting. So John, he runs to the ring, and all John can do is say ruthless aggression very aggressively.
Yeah.
And swing at Bray Wyatt mm-hmm. with one arm. That's mm-hmm. all he can do. And so Bray's talking to John, and John's like, you know, takes a swing at Bray, ruthless aggression, and Bray ducks it and pops back up, and he's like, wow, John, I'm witnessing your biggest failure. It's actually kind of embarrassing. No wonder you almost got fired.
Ruthless aggression.
Swing, Bray ducks. And then we get it. The clip to end all clips. Rock.
You can look, but you can't touch.
Ruthless aggression.
Swing and a miss. We should note, Bray did it with a smirk on his face. He had a hip swivel going on, and he wiggled his eyebrows at John.
Bray really got into
You can look, but you can't touch.
The laugh at the end is the best.
He enjoyed the crap out of that. I just want to say, pausing on this match, if there are outtakes of this, because I want to know how many times they had to shoot that without losing their shit, I want to see them. I want to see the outtakes. Mm-hmm. I really, really do, because I swear to God they exist, because these two had way the hell too much fun shooting this.
Mm-hmm.
Just way too much fun, you can tell.
Mm-hmm.
So, after the final shot, Bray gets out of the ring and runs off, and John chases after him, and then Rock, it's too hot to handle, it's too cold to hold.
It's Saturday night's main event.
And what made its return to WWE screens?
The old big blue cage.
At least part of it.
Part of it. And you can tell it's the original cage because it's so rusted.
Yeah. Yeah, it needs a little love. It needs a lot of love. It's been sitting in the warehouse for a while now.
So they brought back the whole old school Saturday Night's Main Event intro and everything, spliced in with a couple, you know, clips, and then you had your announce team.
Macho Mercy and Mr. McBossman.
That was great.
Awesome. Mercy's got the sunglasses on, like the Macho Man sunglasses on. It's fantastic. And we see Muscle Man Bray. He's behind the cage. And we think he's doing Randy Savage. We can't 100% tell who he's doing, but he's doing like an 80s Southern wrestler.
It's either Savage or Hogan. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's hard to say, but basically, Bray's talking about his tag team partner. The ladies love him. The men want to be him. Johnny Large Meat. Where the hell is my shirt? WWE? Where is it? I want my Johnny Large Meat shirt. I need it. I need that in my life.
It's probably coming.
Wouldn't be the least bit surprised. But yes, so Johnny Large Meat, aka John Cena, in his gear, regular gear, should say, comes out. He's pumping iron. Look at his body. It's all jacked. We didn't think about the Von Erichs. I don't think it was the Von
No, it was
Erichs.
Not the Von Erichs, no.
Because I thought it might be, like, Barry, too, but I don't think it
no,
was.
No, because of the pumping iron, no, it was not the Von Erichs, no.
So anyway, so John comes in, he's pumping iron, he's jacked, he's got veins popping, it looks so not natural.
It looks so weird.
It was so gross with the veins, but he's pumping iron, man! And they're talking about, you know, basically, what you gonna do, brother? What you gonna do, John? You know, John does his best Hogan impression while he's pumping the iron. Abby the Witch, as they zoom in on John's body, her jaw drops and she leans in. And then the most unfortunate thing ever happens. John's pythons just wear out and he blows out, in quotations, his arms, and he can't move his arms. All he can do is swing his limp arms at Bray while Bray smirks at him.
So what you're saying is Johnny Large Meat went limp?
He did. Johnny Large Meat went limp.
F's and Jeff for Johnny Large Meat going limp.
Yeah, it's such a shame. But Bray asked John, what you gonna do, brother, when egomania runs wild on you? And then he, and while Bray's asking him that, we cut to Mercy and the Boss Puppet, and Mr. McBossman's like, damn it, keep your hands up!
Keep your hands up! God, by God, keep your hands up.
And then Bray grabs Cena and throws him out of the Saturday night's main event and directly into the Doctor of Thugonomics.
Alright, we should stop right here for a moment. And just sort of go, they're nuts for just taking the shots that they have and just for being creative. Whether you liked it or not, the one thing you have to say about what we've seen so far and what we're going to see is they took shots and they were creative with them in this one. Like, this whole segment may not be everyone's cup of tea, it's just, but they were having fun and you could tell.
In a scenario where John probably shouldn't wrestle,
no, he
and shouldn't be taking bumps.
No, especially insurance reasons, he shouldn't be taking the bumps that would happen.
This is a really clever way to get around that problem. And I think while I wanted this to be a little bit more physical, what we got in terms of presentation, in terms of creativity, more than made up for it. Because this is an example of how far Bray Wyatt has come. That he can get away with something like this and it completely works for him. And I'm going to explain why it wouldn't have worked with the old character when we get there, because Rock's wish came true in this. My wish came true in this. But yeah, just to be able to do this and do as much as they did in this, because this isn't the end. This is only the middle. This is like the next, there's like a few more parts after this. In terms of references, in terms of places that they took this. But essentially what this is Bray Wyatt taking control of John Cena and making John take a really hard look at himself and who he is, and essentially turning John into a parody of himself. Mm-hmm. And Bray playing along for the ride and being the quote-unquote puppet master through this. So it's really clever, it's really well thought out, and extremely well executed.
Oh, it was. Again, they took their time and they took their effort and they made everything count.
Yep, they took their shots and they took their chance and it worked. So we go to the Doctor of Thugonomics, seen as in his mania gear from last year.
Yeah,
with the
with everything, head to toe, the hat, the exact hat, the things on his knuckles, and the shirt. It was right down to a T from last year's WrestleMania. So, good callback.
Very good callback. So, we get the flashback. Word Life video with the rabbit spliced in. He's wearing the glasses and running the keyboard. Huskus and Abby are grooving to the beat. Bray is grooving to the beat. Cena gets in the ring. And he's like, you know, I went from 6 to midnight. And that's when he realizes he can only talk in rhyme.
I mean, you know, it's what you gotta do when you're the Doctor of Thugonomics. You just gotta talk in rhymes to make it all cool and everything like that. So,
and again, it's that level of psychological control that Bray is exercising, where it's, and physical control, where it's like when he first starts, all he can do is be basic John Cena and say Ruthless Aggression and do one swing. In the next part, all he can do is work out and cut a Hogan-like promo and then blow his arms out, and then he can't fight. Mm-hmm. Now here he is, he's the Doctor of Thugonomics, and all he can do is speak in rhyme. Mm-hmm. So, Cena says, I went from 6 to midnight. You're not taking away my limelight. He's using rap to his advantage. Unlike Husky Harris, it's a weight he can manage.
Oh.
Bray felt the Husky shot. He's like, all right.
Okay, I gotcha. All right. I see where you went there. I got you.
Hey, Bray, I've got an idea for your puppet show. Put my junk in a glove, and you can call it Mr. Suck It, Bro.
Oh.
You've been a disappointment since they brought you to the dance. You're a slut for opportunity, but you're blowing every chance.
Oh. Run.
Yeah, the real soft run.
Run.
As Cena hands off the floor was great. I love that Cena called Bray a slut to his face.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, it's what you call him every night, so...
Goddamn, it's about somebody, you know, somebody had to do it.
About time made television is canon, he's a slut.
Bray Wyatt is a slut. Pass it around.
Well, anyway.
Pass him around, I mean, everybody else does. So, anyway...
Oh snap. Word of life.
Bray takes the mic and he says... Basically, Cena's wrong. He's had to earn every chance, every opportunity he's been given. John is the golden goose. He's untouchable. He's not a hero. He's a bully.
Oh, snap.
He's a horrible person. You take the weakness of others, and he turns it into a joke. You would do anything for fame. You're the man, John. Poor, lonely John Cena.
I mean, those weren't lies.
Those weren't lies, were they?
I mean, he has a reputation for being a little bit of a bully.
There's some stories there that are coming to light.
Just ask Alex Riley.
There you go. So Bray steps back into the corner and says, "The floor is yours." John goes, "You're in the doctor's house. Getting up in my face. All you'll get are these nuts." Literal bag of nuts. He holds up a literal bag of almonds.
I really think they were the same nuts from last year.
In your face. Tosses nuts at Bray. John then runs at Bray, but Bray vanishes out of the corner and reappears behind him, except he's got John's chain around his neck, and he's very slowly wrapping the chain around his hand as John very lightly touches his chest and realizes the chain's gone. He's confused. I think that's like what sets John free, is the chain around his neck, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
Is that weight is lifted and he's now back to being him.
Mm-hmm.
And John turns around and Bray knocks him right out.
Boom.
Then.
Then. Okay, so if you listened to the show last week on Thursday, not on Tuesday, on a Thursday, I told you what I wanted to see in this match. There was one thing I wanted to see. I wanted to see the return of old school Bray Wyatt. And what did we get?
We got the swamp slut, y'all.
Oh, right.
In his formal slut pants. If you don't know what those are, the formal slut pants are the white pants. He got dressed up for John. He had the black leather hat, and then he had on one of the Hawaiian shirts. It wasn't anything that tied to anything significant, unless it was something to do with the Bray-Cena feud. I didn't go that deep into it, but he did have on one of the Hawaiian pants, and he did have on the original snakeskin shoes that he wore when he debuted. And they were also the pants, incidentally, that he went toe-to-toe with against The Rock.
Yep.
Now, there was a lot going on in this background because they basically recreated like a Bray Wyatt, old school Bray Wyatt background behind him. And we had to grab all the references out of this because there was a lot of stuff in there that it took a couple tries to actually get.
This took us like 10 minutes.
This took us 10 minutes to figure this out. Thankfully, WWE was very nice to release still shots from this match for sale on WWE Shop. So we were able to grab quite a lot of the references out of this, and we didn't even go look at the match pictures. We didn't have to, because they gave us a nice wide angle of everything going on in the background. So first and foremost, chair. Actually, both chairs were there.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, there were two rocking chairs there. But he was seated in the chair when you cut in on him. You saw Rowan's sheet masks, some of them laying around,
mm-hmm.
around him. Behind him is Mercy's shirt. And I think to one side is Mercy's shirt. To the other side is, I think, a stuffed rabbit, like a stuffed animal rabbit. That's all dirty and abused and kind of shoved up in a corner in like the chain link. I think there's also a stuffed pig of the same nature somewhere else in there, but mm-hmm. I couldn't make out what it was. There's like a pink thing in the background. Couldn't quite tell what it was, but I think that's the pig. And then I think like Abby's doll face is in a black box at his feet. So I think all the puppets were technically present or at least referenced in this, but they weren't actually there. So I think this is the start of the puppet personalities is where this all kind of ties that in. I don't know though. So we have that. We have the lantern.
Gotta have the lantern. I mean,
the original lantern, not the face lantern.
That'd been creepy.
There's also one of the old school dolls from, I think, not only the House of Horrors match, but also from some of the original promos that they did for the Wyatt family when they debuted. Now, this is where this gets a little interesting.
Okay.
Because everything around him is Wyatt references, right? We have Rowan's masks. We have melted faces slash sheep masks, maybe that are from the burned down house. When Randy torched the compound. But there's something off on the floor in the forefront that you have to look to see, but it's there. And that's the Undertaker's urn.
Yeah.
It's there, guys. He still has it.
It's there.
It's there. You have to look for it. If you're watching the match and they do a wide shot, it is on the floor on the left-hand side towards the front. It's very hard to see in the match itself, but when we looked at the picture, it's there. You can very clearly see it. There is also a casket lid, a pine casket lid, in the background behind everything. And then in the forefront, on the right-hand side, there's a mysterious, wide-brimmed black hat. That is not a fedora.
No, it's not.
So there are multiple references, what I believe are multiple references to Taker. The urn, for sure. The urn is 100% a reference to his match with Taker, so there very much could be clues about
the future,
which we'll get into. We'll talk about that after we get through the match. But that was all the references that we could find in the background around Bray. If you saw anything else, please tweet us, put it in chat, let us know what you think. So then we get to the promo, and oh my god, old school Bray Wyatt in his purest form, full of fire and brimstone. Oh Jesus, I've missed this. This made me so happy. So Bray, he was a color red in a world full of black and white. He had the whole world in his hands. And as he's talking, they're intercutting shots of his debut and shots of him directing the crowd to sing and shots of WrestleMania 30 and the whole build to WrestleMania 30. And Abigail spoke of this day his entire life. And then we see the physical shot of Abigail from one of the promos. And John... Go ahead, sorry.
No, keep going.
John, you were supposed to be a man of the people. Then why weren't you listening? And we have more flashbacks to WrestleMania 30 and Bray directing the crowd again and them seeing he's got the whole world in his hands.
They've got the whole world in his hands.
Hear them now, John. They wanted me. They needed me. It was supposed to be a prophecy fulfilled, but instead it was my grandest failure. I've hurt for so long. I don't remember how to feel. Now I'm going to rewrite my own story. That's really key, guys. Hold on to that. We cut back to the ring. Bray's in the chair. He's glaring at John. And he goes, run.
Run.
He throws off his hat. He bursts out of the chair. And he tackles John in the corner. And they have their dance.
Back from WrestleMania 30, where they had a nice little dance in the ring.
Where Bray does his waltz, Cena's unconscious, and then Bray goes for the Sister Abigail. And by the way, Cena's wearing his shirt either from WrestleMania 30 or in the build of WrestleMania 30, but it's that same shirt. And John breaks free of the Sister Abigail, and Bray starts to drop to his knees as he looks at John and goes, that's not enough to end this, Superman. But this is, and he holds out the chair, or a chair, to John.
And then you get all these flashbacks to WrestleMania 30 of like, do it, John! Do it! Do it!
John takes the chair, and Bray goes, 6 years ago, you made the wrong choice, cowboy.
Fix it, John! Fix it! Fix it!
You know, you can end this. You can fix it. Fix it, John. And Bray's screaming at him, fix it. And John makes the right choice and he aggressively swings. And as he swings for Bray, Bray disappears. And once Bray disappears, Bray's hold on John disappears. And John takes one look at the chair, looks at it in panic and disgust, throws it down, and backs away from it. He's confused. He doesn't know what's going on. And then we have to go a little Nitro. In a complete left turn, the Nitro intro plays, we've got the black and white stuff going on, there's Bray.
It's the NWO Monday Nitro, when they took over Monday Nitro for a night.
There's Bray in the ring, in his leather jacket, doing his best Eric Bischoff impression, which Eric Bischoff had the best reaction.
He had the great reaction to it.
He's like, I was fired in October and I main evented WrestleMania. Nobody's ever done that before. Like, oh, Eric, you troll. You goddamn troll. I love it. So Bray is like, you know what I want to do? You know what I really, really, really want to do? And then he introduces Hollywood Cena with the NWO title.
This is some good shit right here.
Yeah, and that's where the meme was born, guys. Mr. McBossman, this is some good shit.
That's some good shit right here. Yeah.
This is such good shit.
This is such good shit, yeah. Which is a Vince McMahon, like everyone says, that's what Vince says when he really likes something. This is good shit. This is good shit, pal.
It's interesting how many Hogan shots they took.
Hogan shots, Vince shots.
It's just really funny.
So they're too sweet.
They're too sweet.
Because you gotta do all the NWO trademarks.
You know, John's using the title as the guitar. They're laughing. They're having a good time. And then they flash to when the NWO attacked. And John turns on Bray Bischoff, or Eric Wyatt, however you want to put it.
Or, better yet, EZB.
EZB. EZB works. And he attacks him. And he starts to pummel Bray.
Stop it. You're hurting him.
Abby and Ramblin' plead with John to stop. He continues to pummel Bray.
He ain't gonna like this.
Yeah, he ain't gonna like this. It's like, oh, and we see, and as John is continuing to pummel what we think is Bray, we see shots of signs of Cena wins, we riot. We hear Cena being booed. We get the Cena sucks chant. You know, we see shots of Punk leaving with the WWE Championship.
Taker tombstoning him. It was all, what we saw were basically Cena's biggest failures. Cena losing a one-night stand, Cena losing to Punk, Cena losing to The Undertaker at WrestleMania, things like that. A lot of his big failures.
And John just snaps. He continues to pummel and he continues to pummel until Bray becomes Huskus, the pig. And we just see a lifeless Huskus laying under John. And John stops. And he just breaks. You just see him break right there. He's in his regular gear. He's himself. He's free of Bray Wyatt's spell for the moment. And all of Bray's magic, all of Bray's mind games have worked. Except that something's not quite right. Things are a little gritty. They're a little grainy. They're a little desaturated.
He's here.
And we see the Fiend laying in wait behind Cena, who's just broken. He doesn't know what to do. I think he's realized.
He's screwed.
Everything. Huh?
He's screwed.
He's screwed. And everything Bray Wyatt said was true. And that the Fiend does not rely on fear or confusion or chaos. The Fiend will take you apart and use your flaws against you and beat you with him.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody came up with a really good theory that we're going to talk about after that, but essentially Bray Wyatt and John Cena are the same person, just two different presentations.
Yeah, they are. If you look at it, when they came up on the main roster to get in different points, Ruthless Aggression John Cena didn't work. Husky didn't work. They had to be repackaged to work. I'm going to continue.
So the Fiend strikes as Cena turns around. He grabs Cena with the mandible claw. And as the Fiend is mandible clawing Cena down, they overlay Cena's promo, his final promo from SmackDown,
It was when he had him in the Sister Abigail setup.
Okay. He sets him up with Sister Abigail and he goes, this match will accomplish what should have happened 6 years ago. And in the existence of the most overhyped, overvalued, overprivileged WWE superstar in existence, Bray hits the Sister Abigail, but he's not done. The Fiend goes for the kill with more mandible claw. And he's got Cena down. He's got him on his back. Bray appears and counts Cena down. 1, 2, 3. Winky face and a laugh. And the Fiend wins. The Fiend beats John Cena and stands tall in triumph. Cena vanishes, and we get the let me in, and that is the last thing we see of the Firefly Funhouse before we cut to Titus O'Neil's face.
I don't know what I just saw.
I think that was everybody. I think Titus O'Neil was all of us in that moment, because I think we all just sat here for a minute and were like, holy shit, what did we just watch? Like, this was a train wreck in all the best ways. I mean, you could not take your eyes off of it. It was positively hypnotic. And like I said, I watched it 4 times in the last 48 hours, partially because I was trying to do research for it, and partially because I just wanted to watch it again, because there's such beautiful storytelling in this. And it shows, like I said, how far Bray Wyatt has come as a character. And I'm going to use his real name, and if it's offensive, I'm sorry. And it shows how ungodly talented Wyndham Rotunda really is. That boy is gifted.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of being able to do a character and act and do voices and everything else. Oh my God. I hope he has a career after wrestling. In terms of acting, because he should.
Yeah, he should.
I mean, he did what? 4 or 5 different characters?
Something like that, yeah.
In one match. Not to mention, he voiced all the puppets.
Mm-hmm.
Which, the puppets weren't that much, but he still, every week, he does the voicing for the puppets, and they all have different voices, and they all have different characteristics and everything else. It's just insane how talented he is.
He's very talented. He's very charismatic and very entertaining. He has something that can draw you to the television screen, which is why he has the following that he does. And here, this little experience, this whole segment, this whole match, in quotation, where he got his win back from John Cena, the Fiend righted the wrong from what happened with Bray Wyatt and John Cena at WrestleMania 30, showed how the range of Bray Wyatt as the person, the character can do. Again, we said at the top, this may not have been for everybody, and that's fine. But you look at this whole thing, and you go, they told one hell of a story. From top to bottom, they showed you all the flaws of John Cena, they showed the flaws of Bray Wyatt, and they went back and told the story. Like, some people are like, oh, they just threw this together. It's like, if you actually look at it, no, there's a lot of hidden details that no one will really get unless you're a really fan of John Cena or a big fan of Bray Wyatt, and you go, yeah, that makes sense, and it all ties together because it's very subtle at points.
There's little things that are just so, so beautiful. And while I was thrilled to see the Swamp original version of Bray Wyatt and hear him in his pure form and see him really be all that we ever felt he could be, you could have never done anything like this with him. Never. It never would have worked in this context. The fact that Bray has come up with a character that is that universal, that can do this, right? Which is just complete batshit insanity, going from one thing to another. It all ties together because it's all a story, and it work is amazing. And not only just work with the one character, work with the Fiend too.
Mm.
I mean, that's just amazing to me.
And then big props to John. Because John didn't have to
do
any of this. They could have gone out and they could have went, let's just do a little quick match in the ring. Bing, bam, boom. You beat me. Yada, yada, yada. But the fact that Cena, who, as we've seen in his movies, is willing to take chances and not look like a fool at times, he was able to poke fun at himself. And that's the best person you can be, is when you can poke fun at yourself. This is the best characters. Because if you just keep to yourself and you keep your own character and you're very protective of it, then nothing's ever going to get accomplished. And John knew that. John knows his place right now. He's not here long term. He's not in WWE to be the guy anymore. He's here to help get something over, despite what his promos were saying. He came into WrestleMania 36 and got the Fiend over. Not even the Fiend. He got Bray Wyatt over. He righted the wrong in what the fans thought. He reestablished Bray after Bray lost to Goldberg. Which, there's a funny story about that with Braun. Because Braun apparently was driving up to Wisconsin. He was 3 hours away from Wisconsin. Had to be after driving for 21 hours. And then was told, hey, you gotta come back to work. So they flew him back in on jet the same day. He was there for 3 hours. They flew him back in a jet so he can work WrestleMania because they were in trouble because of Roman. That's why when we reviewed it on Saturday, it's like, what was he wearing? What was he doing? Ah, that explains it all.
Good on Braun, though. Good on Braun for doing that and flying back after driving 21 hours because, man, that sucks. But what I really liked about this is this wasn't all the Fiend.
No.
This was, they held the Fiend back until the very end, and they let Funhouse Bray shine.
Yeah.
Which is what I feel like they needed to do, because we get so little exposure to Funhouse Bray, just essentially what we see in the promos, that to actually get to see him do everything that he did, where he did the impressions, and he did the funny skits, and he did the rap battle, and the insults, and the promos, and everything else outside of the Fiend was absolutely wonderful. And then you get to the end and he's waiting to come in for the kill. Like, Funhouse Bray does his job. He strips Cena down, he breaks Cena, and then the Fiend comes in and finishes the job.
And this is all is just in Bray's head, by the way. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, this is all in Bray's head, all of this. That's where this is assumed this takes place, is the Funhouse is in Bray's mind, the puppets are voices in Bray's head, the Fiend is something of Bray's imagination, and then Funhouse Bray is how he sees himself.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, again, just absolutely incredible. But I want to bring up, because we talked about it, and I have to bring it up, a couple things. One, since John pummeled him, is Huskus dead, thus killing Husky Harris once and for all?
Maybe.
We'll have to see on that one, but I just found that interesting that out of all the puppets, Huskus is the one that gets it. And two, we got to talk about Taker references. We have to. Because Bray says that John, he's going to right the wrong. He's going to rewrite his own story. And he doesn't follow that up with John. He just says, I'm going to rewrite my own story. And there's a lot of references to Taker. Now, Bray had a bunch of big feuds when he was the Swamp version, but I find it very interesting, out of all the props that were selected, there were like three references to Taker, at least.
Yeah.
That's very, very interesting to me, because there was like nothing referencing Randy, nothing referencing Matt Hardy. There were references to Rowan, nothing for Harper.
Because you really can't for Harper.
Yeah, you could have thrown like a plaid shirt or a bandana or something in there, and that could have been him. But out of all the big feuds, Taker is extremely present.
Makes you wonder, is Taker next on the hit list?
I mean, he could be. And in terms of doing a cinematic match, in terms of doing something else like this, now is the time. Let's all be completely real. Let's all be completely honest. They are not going to have audiences back in arenas anytime soon. So they're going to have to find clever ways to do empty arena matches. And clearly the cinematics are a hit. They did an excellent job on both. It's the way, it is the best way, at least for Taker, to be shown.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can show him in his best light. And he looks phenomenal. And Bray looked fantastic and phenomenal as well. But Bray doesn't necessarily need it. But if you need the smoke and mirrors for Bray and Taker, you have the smoke and mirrors. And just imagine the mind games they could play with each other.
They could really, really do something good.
And Bray just rakes Taker's past over the coals.
He could.
Personal and professional.
Mm-hmm.
Because AJ opened the door, you can go there with him now. Now, will he do all the stupid, silly skits? Probably not. But I just invite you to think about it. Bray Wyatt doing his best Paul Bearer impression.
Oh, yes.
I mean, he could.
He could.
He could do his best DiBiase impression. Just think about that, y'all. I've also seen a lot of people saying Taker Sting.
No.
Please don't. I mean, maybe in a cinematic it might be okay.
But there's... You need a story. And just because they're two dark characters doesn't give them a story at this stage of the game.
Yeah. But I mean, you could do it if you really wanted to. But yeah, this was nothing what anybody expected, because we didn't know what to expect. But this was beyond satisfying in terms of how they did this. I was expecting something much more physical, and it wasn't. But you had Bray playing mind games. You had Bray controlling Cena through the whole thing. Where it's, you know, Bray challenged Cena to his match, right? Firefly Funhouse, where he has all the control. So Bray was able to win. And you got to see Bray Wyatt at his most powerful, which I loved. I'm here for.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we got the Swamp Slut, which
was on the icing on top of the cake.
In all his glory. Oh, God, it just made me happy. Like, I love The Fiend. I love Funhouse Bray, but I'm a purist.
She is. She
and is. I never... I always felt like the Swamp version of Bray Wyatt never really got his due, because he lost to Cena, And he never, ever really got that same momentum back as what he had with Cena. He came close, but he never got that full momentum back, and nobody really ever took him seriously after that.
But I think with that, we should take a break.
Yeah, so we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to be talking about the other matches, the other seven matches on the card.
Eight. Because the pre-show.
Oh, right, the pre-show. So you're listening to The Rack right here on WildTalkRadio.com, and we'll be right back.
This is basic thugonomics. This is basic thugonomics.
Word life.
I'm untouchable, but I'm forcing you to feel me.
Word life.
This is basic thugonomics.
Word life.
Like what you hear? Subscribe to The Rack on Apple Podcasts. Just search for The Rack Radio Show. And while you're there, leave us a review and tell us your thoughts on your favorite show on a Thursday night.
What is the greatest of all time? Saturday nights. We decide from sports, video games, movies, and even the X-rated. You help us decide what is the greatest of all time. It is the Great and Great Debate, a part of your Saturday night.
Event.
CB Radio. Saturday night. Midnight-ish Eastern. On the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Every Monday night, get caught up with everything that happens on Monday Night Raw with the Raw Post Show.
As my client Brock Lesnar said, Suplex City, bitch.
From the big returns.
So this is what it feels like to kick off Monday Night Raw.
To the shocking moment.
You will get your rematch. Put that man down. Your actions have consequences. And you know what? You're out of here. You're suspended. You know what? You're suspended indefinitely. Get out of my building now. Now get out.
And the moments that leave you speechless.
Snoop Mania, huh? Snoop Mania? Nah, Snoop Dizzle. It's called Axel Mania. And it's not a West Coast thing. It's not an East Coast thing. It's a worldwide thing. And I'm not gonna sit back and listen to you talk about Snoop Mania when Axel Mania is running wild in Los Angeles! Bow wow wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yay. Axel Mania is here to stay.
It's the Raw Post Show, Monday nights, live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Did you know you can use support a creator code, Rock and Sock, in the Fortnite item shop? That's R-O-C-K-N-S-O-C-K in the Fortnite item shop.
This is the undisputed future of WWE, Seth Rollins, and you are listening to The Rack on Wild Talk Radio.
Welcome back to The Rack right here on WildTalkRadio.com, brought to you by our friends over at MBG Films. Check them out, youtube.com/MBG1211. And if you're listening to us over on RackRadioShow.com, WildTalkRadio.com, or directly on Twitch, thank you so much for tuning in. We greatly appreciate it. And, you know, if you're listening on Twitch and you happen to have Twitch Prime available, well, you can quick Click the little purple heart up at the top of the screen, and you can subscribe to this channel for free if you have your Twitch Prime available. If not, you can also just regular subscribe. We would be fine with that too, but if you don't want to, we understand. It's okay. If you haven't followed the channel, you can also follow the channel, and if you're in a following mood, you can go over to twitch.tv/linswort after the broadcast. That's LNSWRD, and you can follow my channel, because I would greatly appreciate it, because I want my fish butt emote, damn it, please. Please, you can turn the notifications off. I'm really not that obnoxious, I promise. So anyway, we're back to talk about the rest of WrestleMania.
We are here to talk about the rest of WrestleMania because, by God, there was more to dive into. Kicked off with the pre-show, Liv Morgan and Natalya. I have one criticism of this match because I thought it was a solid match. Not great, not anything to write home about, but it was a solid match. Liv is definitely improving, and being in the ring with Natty helps. But Natty needed to be more vocal and expressive in the match. I mean, that's not the thing she's used to doing. It's not in true Natty form, but we needed more of that, especially to add to the element of no crowd. We'll talk about it in the next match, where they were the complete opposite, and they were very expressive in their match.
Yeah, this WrestleMania was very much about acting, emoting, playing to the cameras versus playing to the crowd. And I feel like the people that are very, very good at doing that rose to the top in this WrestleMania. Because there were a lot of people who pivoted, who understood there is no crowd, so we have to be loud. We have to make sure that the cameras and the mics hear us, so that way the crowd hears us at home. Because they get that the crowd is not there, but they're watching. They're listening. They're there. So they want to make sure they're heard. And there was a lot of banter. There was a lot of insults. There was a lot of back and forth throughout a ton of the matches. This one didn't have it as much. They tried really hard. I know that it's not Natty's forte.
No, it's not.
It's not really what she's used to doing. She did try, but she's emoting and acting is not necessarily a part of what she does. So it's excusable. It's fine. Liv, like you said, is definitely improving, and being in the ring with Natty certainly doesn't hurt. She's one of the best wrestlers in the business. But yeah, this was just okay. This wasn't necessarily anything to write home about, but this was fine. It was a good pre-show match.
It was a solid pre-show match. Then we get to the main show, and it kicked off with Charlotte Flair challenging Rhea Ripley for the NXT Women's Championship. And if I say these two girls were loud, these two girls were really, really, really loud. But that was a good thing, because they hit hard all day, all night. And they kept coming after one another. And it was fantastic.
They didn't just hit hard with their fists. They hit hard with insults, too. Like, they were hurling insults left, right, and center. They were screaming at each other. I mean, this was great. The only thing that makes me cry about this match is that you know they both had special entrances. Mm-hmm. You know they did, because Charlotte came out in this absolutely glorious, fantastic, bejeweled robe. Rhea had new gear made where it was blue and white and gold,
which was a throwback to her first original gear, apparently.
And she looked great. She looked fantastic.
Okay,
it's
going to say sound wrong, but you could actually finally see her assets.
Yeah, you could. She had a top that was not just a cutout t-shirt, but she looks fine in either.
Yeah, but it just showed that she had stuff. The best way to describe it. She had a rack. Anyway, continuing.
Moving on. So yeah, this was fantastic. This was absolutely fantastic. Love the crap out of this. This was super hard hitting, and like Rock said,
this was the best match of the weekend.
Yeah, yeah. And I think a lot of people were disappointed with the finish, because in the end, Charlotte won, and she's now your NXT Women's Champion. I'll admit, I was one of the people, just because it's like, oh, LOL, Charlotte wins a title at Mania. Woo! But apparently, Rhea is having to renew her visa.
Supposedly. There's a rumor going around that Rhea Ripley has to renew her visa and send it back to Australia. Whether that's true or not, we do not know. We cannot confirm it. But if that's one of the reasons behind it, then there you go. Number two, there's talk about it being for ratings and help try to spice up the NXT ratings. And when they
you do it,
you got to do what you got to do. And let's be real. If we exchange Charlotte for Rhea right now, or not Charlotte for Bianca right now on brands, it's fine, because now going forward, you have the opportunity to give Charlotte new matches. And that's the one thing she hasn't had in forever, because she's been wrestling Becky Lynch for so long. It's been Becky and Charlotte and Asuka. That's about it. That's all we really have. There's no real new opponents for Charlotte, so her going to NXT as the champion opens up a wide variety of new matches and new challenges for her, because Charlotte's an athlete and she loves competition. Then she steps up her game when she faces new people. Look what she did with Rhea Ripley at WrestleMania. See what she did with Bianca Belair. And then imagine what she could do with the rest of the roster down in NXT right now. You have six women tomorrow night on NXT competing now to fight Charlotte Flair. Not just Rhea Ripley. Now it's Charlotte Flair you have to win. You get a fight against. Imagine Charlotte Flair versus Tegan Nox.
I mean, yeah.
Charlotte versus Io Shirai.
I mean,
let's be
real.
The
list goes on and on and on.
That you got six talented women in a ladder match tomorrow night, and they can all get in the ring with Charlotte Flair and have a hell of a match. I mean, that just says something what we got. And that's just six of the women down next day. So you have the possibility to do something interesting and new for a little while with Charlotte until it gets a little old. Then you have the next woman beat her, whether it's Rhea when she comes back or one of the other girls beats her, and then Charlotte has to go back to Monday Night Raw. I mean, it's that simple.
It is. It's very simple. But great match. Probably one of the best matches on the weekend right here.
I would say the best match. The best actual match.
Yeah, not a funhouse experience.
Or a boneyard of a fight.
So what's next?
What was next on the show? I was trying to do this off memory, and now I can't remember. Oh, it was Aleister Black and Bobby Lashley. Yep, Aleister Black won. When Lana goes, "Hey, Bobby, spear him. Spear him." And then the spear didn't work. He kicked him right in the face.
Ooh, yeah, did he ever. Yeah. Side note, it's really interesting because I was sitting here. I was like, because you know it's Mania, right? And you know people have gear made for Mania, or they have special items made for Mania. And it's like, wonder who all's going to actually wear their special stuff and who's going to save it. Aleister Black had stuff made for this guy.
He was very horny.
He had these two giant horns on this, like, leather, shredded leather robe that looked like it was decaying. It was ultra cool. Like, it was super effing cool. But yeah, he just walks out and there's these two giant horns on his shoulders. And you're like, okay, all right, cool.
So yeah, Aleister got his win.
Bobby Lashley had pants.
He did have pants.
Lana's ginger now.
She's back to her natural hair color.
Yeah. No more blonde. She's now like an auburn sort of brunette.
Something like that. But then we had the most heartwarming moment of the night. It was Otis versus Dolph Ziggler. Dolph comes down with Sonya Deville in his corner, and they're having a fine little match, right? Nothing crazy. It's Otis and then Ziggler. They're having a match. It's Sonya getting involved, and then she gets involved one too many times. Ziggler kicks Otis in the balls. But when Otis gets kicked in the balls, out comes Mandy. And Ziggler's going, "What are you doing? You're ruining everything." And then she gets in the ring. She goes low on Dolph Ziggler. Otis gives the caterpillar to Dolph. Otis gets his WrestleMania win. But more importantly, Otis gets the girl. He picks up Mandy, carries her around. They kiss. He's going, "So pretty. She's so pretty." Otis was very happy. He got the girl.
This was probably the weirdest payoff. I mean, it was satisfying, don't get me wrong, but it was so weird because they just went ahead and revealed this on SmackDown really randomly.
Yeah.
That Sonya set up Otis and Mandy for Dolph for some unknown reason that I am sure will be revealed later. But it was just really sort of bizarre how they did it. And then it's like, okay, all right, so you had Otis win, you had him get the girl, you had Mandy smack Sonya around a little bit. I mean, I don't know, this just felt really strange. Like, it was a good match. It was the most serious that we've seen Otis. I was a little sad Tucker wasn't there. I really hope they don't split them up.
No, he was injured on SmackDown, which is why he was not on out there.
He can stand there and look cute.
I mean, he was injured. So, but Matt, okay, so this was the one drawback from No Fans. The pop that Otis would have got when he kissed Mandy. Been huge.
Oh, it would have been absolutely massive. Like, just yeah, it's sad. It's really sad that we didn't get that, but I guess it is what it is at this point.
But he still got the girl. That's all that matters. He got the girl. Then, in a match that probably could have had sliced about 10 minutes off of it, and everyone would have been okay, last man standing, Edge versus Randy Orton.
There was some weird sexual tension going on in this. I mean, I'm just going to throw that out there. Like, there, I feel like at some point this went from, like, Edge and Randy just fighting because Randy took out Edge and betrayed Edge to, if Randy wins, Edge has to stay with Randy, but if Edge wins, he gets to go home with Beth. I don't know. That's just what this felt like. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just weird. There was just some really weird sexual tension going on in this match. But I loved this match. Let me tell you why.
Tell me why.
So, the match opens with Edge coming out to the arena. It's empty. And then they play Randy's music. But Randy doesn't come. Right? He's nowhere to be found. And Edge is looking around. He's like, where is he? Where is he? Where is he? I'm sitting here screaming time behind you.
She's legit screaming at this.
Because I know Randy Orton. And sure enough, what happens? Randy Orton comes up from behind and RKO's Edge out of nowhere. Except, well, Randy's a sneaky devil. He was there the whole time. He decided to disguise himself as a cameraman. We don't know what happened to the other cameraman. We don't.
We don't.
I'm hoping he just got paid off and is having a lovely vacation at his house. But her house. I shouldn't, say it. It should just be a man. Could be either or neither. But yeah, we don't know what happened to the camera person. We don't. But anyway, Randy shows up with a camera and he takes off this like hoodie thing that he had on to conceal his identity. And the first thing we see is Randy Orton in pants. And for a second, I freaked out because it's like, oh my God, is Randy going to fight in pants? Which again, it's a context thing. Randy Orton wearing pants means shit's about to get super real. Because that man never wears pants on television. Ever. He just walks around in his little man panties all the time. If he shows up in pants, you have a problem. Because he couldn't even be bothered to take his pants off to kick your ass. He just took his shirt off. And again, it's so rare that it's usually he just gets super violent. So anyway, Randy strips right there in the middle of the ring. Pants come off. Everything's fine. Everything's normal. And the two proceed to fight. And they proceed to fight all over the PC. And we're going to talk about the one thing that has everybody in an uproar. But I think my favorite part of this match was the random WWE personnel that were there that inadvertently or advertently ended up in the shots. And also the two cameramen that got taken out in the process. Or no, one camera guy and the other one was chasing them around the PC.
Yeah.
Like WWE, known for their high quality production values. One camera guy gets knocked on his ass and he's shooting the ceiling while Edge and Randy are fighting in front of him in the office space. The other one, when that one gets knocked down, is running through the arena or running through the building trying to find them in the back somewhere to catch them fighting.
And here's the thing. This was pre-taped. They could have cut that part out.
They didn't. They left it in intentionally, which I love. Then we're in the back, right? We're fighting in the back. We're throwing things at each other. We're in all the equipment, everything like that. We get to the backstage interview area. We find it, which it's tucked way in the back in a corner. And there's a random camera guy with the stand-up camera, right? Adjusting it, messing with it, just casually chilling with his camera. Randy Orton, Edge come rolling through. Guy's like, whatever, walks off. There's another guy sitting at a table back behind everything where he's like, ooh, what's going on there? Like, he's watching the fight and he's a little scared because he's like, don't come near me. Don't come near me. Don't come near me. Stay away. Stay away from my tables. I have tables. Oh, God, I have tables. I think he got run off at one point. When they're at ringside, there's the cord roller girl that she's trying so hard and so desperately not to be seen on camera. And she's, like, pressed against the wall. And she's like, oh, God, stop shooting me. Please stop shooting me. I don't want to be in the shot anymore. It's like, that was some of the best parts. Was not even the match itself. It's just the random WWE personnel that ended up in the shots.
Yeah.
Or affecting the shots. Like, it was just, it was great.
So, they battled in the arena. They battled backstage in the workout area where Edge and Orton did a hanging little bit. And everyone in the arena went, oh my God, I can't believe they're doing things. Just calm it down. Calm it down.
I don't think it was intended to be what you think it was intended to be, but I understand why everybody is hypersensitive.
Everyone's just very too sensitive about things. Just we'll let it be on that.
Because of a documentary that happened.
Yeah. So they're fighting through the hallways, through the office areas, into the posters and everything like that. You like this building is going to need to be scrubbed down after they're done. Probably going to get, you know, a whole new building. So they're all fighting everywhere and doing all these different things. There's one point they get in an area with red lighting and it's like, oh my god, is the Fiend there? But then they get backstage and then they're in parking area and then they're fighting.
I think the red lighting was behind the WrestleMania sign.
Yeah, that's what it was. Or, yeah, it was the WrestleMania sign. So they're fighting on the back of someone's pickup truck. You got moves on the back of a pickup truck, so whoever's poor pickup truck that was, I'm sorry.
But the love and concern when Edge gets dropped headfirst into the back of the pickup truck was so sweet. Because the ref is like, are you okay? Are you all right? Meanwhile, he's like checking on Edge. He's holding his hand. He's making sure he's okay.
And then Orton's bleeding.
Orton's bleeding. Well, no, Orton started bleeding when Edge jumped on him through the tables.
Mm-hmm. But it's like, you see, they're checking on Edge, but Orton's bleeding. You know, it's like, oh yeah. So we had some spears, DDTs, RKOs. Then they get on top of a semi-truck, and that's where they end up fighting to the end. And yeah, we had a concerto to end the match.
Which was very well acted by Edge, where he showed the anguish of having to do this to his former best friend. Like, ultimately, he's not ashamed that he had to do it, but, like, he did it anyway, because he could, right? Because he had to. That was the whole point. I have an early tweet of the week, because it is relevant to this match, if I can find it real quick. Yeah, so Beth Phoenix, I think either right after this match or during this match, tweets out, I'm changing my style. No more ladders. And it's a photo from the match of Edge standing on top of a chain link fence, like cage / room / holding area next to a ladder, jumping off of it and onto Randy Orton. And the quote was from Edge, Rated R Superstar. That is a good wife right there. Where she's just like, damn it.
And if you don't know what she's referencing, is the Edge special where he goes, I'm changing my style. You're never going to see me going through flaming tables and barbed wire and thumbtacks and stuff like that. And the first match back is the last man standing match.
Just saying. But yeah, this was super good. It was a little long. It had some really weird sexual tension throughout it. But otherwise, it was good. It was a really good first match back for Edge. Again, a little side, it wasn't in front of a live crowd, but there was absolutely nothing they could do about that.
So on day one, Mojo won the 24/7 championship. On day two, Gronk does a trust fall onto a bunch of people and gets the 24/7 championship.
My dad brought this up to me. He's like, Ron Gronkowski won a title in WWE? And I'm like, yeah, he won the 24/7 title.
So
it's fine.
So what the best part about it is all the sports people had to tweet about it. Like the NFL people were tweeting about it and like random sports reporters were tweeting about it. But like Adam Schefter was tweeting about it because it's football related kind of news because former football player Rob Gronkowski won the 24/7 championship at WrestleMania. So big deal, Adam Schefter had to report on it. Just saying. We then had the Raw Tag Team title match. Street Profits versus Angelo Dawkins versus Austin Theory and Angel Garza. Solid, small little match. The big thing was Bianca Belair showing up.
Yeah, the match itself was fine. The Street Profits were having lots of fun finding the camera people and messing with the camera people. And Zelina looked amazing. She had on her gold halo crown with like gold, this gold top that was like filigree and skulls and everything. It was really super cool. Except Zelina got a little ahead of herself. She attacked the Street Profits after they won the match. And, well, somebody took exception. Miss Belair, who is married to Montez Ford, took exception and came out and basically whooped Zelina's butt.
Yep.
And the trio stood tall in the Street Profits and Bianca Belair at the end, with her aloft on their shoulders.
By the way, if you haven't seen either Bianca's or Montez's Twitter, they had their WrestleMania party at home. They're all dressed to the nines and everything. It's perfect.
Side note, get you someone that looks at you the way that Montez Ford looks at Bianca Belair. Because holy shit, when he like looks up and he realizes she's there, he's like, hi. It's so cute. It's just so cute. He also knows he's in serious trouble because she's there.
Mm-hmm. It was then, Titus is now the host because, well, reasons.
Brock took off.
Mm-hmm. We told you his next appearance. But it was Bayley, Sasha Banks, Naomi, Lacey Evans, and Tamina in a Fatal 5-Way match for the elimination match for the SmackDown Women's Championship. One, they made Tamina seem like she's the biggest deal of all biggest deals because everyone had to hit their finish or a high-risk maneuver on Tamina to eliminate her.
And then they all had to lay on top of her to pin her. I felt so bad for her because they just, like, got her out of that match. I think she hit, like, a few moves, and then they're like, yeah, bye.
She was in there for a couple minutes, and it was like, yeah, you're gone. Then Naomi was gone after that. So it was boiled down to Sasha, Lacey, Bayley. Now, last week on the Thursday show, I talked about how you have to save Bayley and Sasha from actually fighting because, you know, there's a big match there and whatever. And they kind of didn't really fight in this one because there was a mistake involved. Bayley accidentally hit Sasha and, you know, that caused some tension between the two women. And Lacey took right advantage of it. She went to attack Sasha. Bayley shoved her out of the way. But then Bayley shoved Evans, who then nailed the woman's right on Sasha, knocking her out. And Bayley was on the ground, watched the 1-2-3 happen. And then it was Bayley and Lacey fighting it out as the final two. And Bayley, like, gets super uber aggressive, and she ties Lacey up into the one with the tag rope in the corner and just beat on her and beat on her and beat on her. She eventually got out of it. As we watch this whole beatdown going, it's like Sasha's still on the ground. What is Sasha gonna do? So as Lacey got control, she did her salute, moonsault, got near fall. She's getting ready to hit the woman's right. Sasha comes in, backstab her on Lacey. And then Bayley did her finisher and got the win. So Sasha stood by her friend at the end. But even though, and then Bayley's celebration at the end was great. She's just yelling at, you can't beat me, JBL. You can't beat me, Michael. Nobody can beat me. I'm the best. Yada, yada, yada. This was a good showcase for Bayley.
I think one of the things that I really liked about this was the story that they told where Bayley the whole night is in her own head about Sasha.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the end, Bayley knows Sasha, and Sasha knows Bayley, and Sasha knows she can beat Bayley anytime she wants, like a drum. Bayley can return the favor, but Bayley's still not as confident about it as she would let you believe.
Mm-hmm.
So they did this really great storytelling the whole time between them. They did this really subtle tension between them where Bayley's nervous because Bayley knows out of everybody in that match, the one person that can beat her is Sasha Banks. Now, they work together to a point when Bayley pseudo-saves Sasha, but then conveniently shoves Lacey into Sasha, knocking her out and getting her eliminated. Well, I wouldn't say that was coincidental. I would say that was
on purpose.
On purpose, a happenstance, if you will, where Bayley got rid of her biggest threat. Not to say that Lacey isn't a big threat. Lacey has improved quite a bit. She looked really good in this match. I liked her gear, except for her hat. I don't know what was going on there. Please never wear it again. But her gear was cute. Her gear was ultra cute. Everybody looked good. Naomi looked like fire. She had this little like light whip thing.
Mm-hmm.
That was a little strange. But yeah, Sasha looked on point. Liked Bayley's gear. Liked Tamina's gear.
The jacket on Bayley was weird though.
The jacket on Bayley was weird. But yeah, like Sasha though. Like Sasha's husband is so talented.
Yeah.
Good
is.
Lord. But the match itself, the match was good. I felt bad for Tamina. I'm sorry. I did. Like, they set her up, especially on SmackDown, to be this badass. They're talking about how she's like the wild card. And she's like, you know, you don't know what she's going to do. And she's the first one gone. And she's gone within the first few minutes of the match. So it's like, do y'all have to do her like that? Do you really have to do her like that? I mean, come on.
But to be fair, she hasn't wrestled in forever, so probably going 5-6 minutes is probably as long as she can go right now.
Yeah, that's true. And I acknowledge that, but still, it's like, y'all, come on. So yeah, this was good.
And then this
was really good.
This took us to the Firefly Funhouse, which we just recapped, and then took us to our main event for the WWE Championship, Brock Lesnar and Drew McIntyre. To say it was an afterthought as we were watching the show, it was an afterthought. No offense to Drew or Brock. It was, we were still enthralled with the Firefly Funhouse.
I think everybody was still absorbing it. I think everybody was still coming out of the shock of it. And this match was just not long enough to come out of that shock and really react the way that you should. I think some people absolutely did. But a lot of other people were like, wait, what? What just happened? What did I watch? Wait. Drew won? Mm-hmm. What? It was Drew won?
In a 4-minute match.
In a 4-minute match where Brock Germaned and F5 the crap out of Drew. Drew kept getting up, and 3 Claymore kicks later, and he is your new WWE champion.
It was fine for what it was. As mentioned, it needed the crowd. The moment needed the crowd. Like, they worked the match like it would have been in front of the crowd. There was no extra oomph behind it. Heyman tried, but there was not enough oomph behind it. It was just a match. It was just a quick little Brock Lesnar fight that in front of a crowd of 80,000 people, you could have got behind. But with no crowd, the attraction known as Brock Lesnar really doesn't work. Because he's intimidating and he gets a crowd riled up. Here, you couldn't rile up anything. It was just him throwing Drew around and Drew fighting back. And there was no big comeback with the crowd. It just, this matchup out of them all needed the crowd to make the finish. And it didn't have it. But Drew's your champion. It just felt underwhelming. 1, coming off the funhouse. And 2, it wasn't long enough to get you away from that moment because the match was 4 minutes long.
Yeah, it was. Drew absolutely deserved to close WrestleMania and hold the title aloft and celebrate his win. He's worked incredibly hard to get here. He came in. He wasn't ready for the opportunity that he had been given. He was shown the door. He went out on the indies again. He busted his butt. He came up with a new character. He worked different promotions until he got WWE's attention again. And then he went to NXT, where he proved himself in NXT. Not that he needed to, but he did. And now he's rose to the cream of the crop in the WWE for Raw. This was, again, like Rock said, this is one of the matches that suffered because it didn't have the crowd. And while you had Drew doing his best to emote and be loud and talk crap, Brock is not that person. Brock is not an actor. Brock is not really, I would even say, necessarily a performer. He is a fighter.
He's an attraction. He's a prize fighter.
He shows up, he does his business, and he leaves. He's not necessarily there for talking shit during a match, although he would if he wanted to. He was just there to do his job and leave. And that's the character. That's what he does. And so this match suffered because of it. Because it was, like you said, it was all only 4 minutes long. I had to go back and rewatch this match because I was still so in shock of what had happened previously that it's like, you know, that's great that Drew won. I'm super happy for Drew. He's definitely earned it. But what the F just happened with Cena and Bray. And we called that. We called that on Thursday that whatever the Funhouse was going to be, it was going to overshadow anything around it. Anything. Including the championship match. Because it's just going to be on that side of Bizarre that it's going to overtake everything else behind it for at least a few matches. And I don't want to knock Drew, but I feel like this should have been last. I understand why it wasn't, and Drew deserves to close the show. This should have gone last, just because there was that initial shock that sort of ruined the Drew-Brock match for me. That's my only criticism of that, was it was just there was so much to process. My brain was, like, going into overdrive. Smoke was coming out of my ears, and all I wanted to do was watch the Funhouse and match again to get everything that I missed the first time. Mm-hmm. And that's what made watching this final match really, really difficult, because it's like my brain went one way and it's like, no, you have to go this way right now. We'll worry about everything else later. And for the record, I did rewatch it that night after WrestleMania was over. But all in all, a satisfying WrestleMania for sure for me.
It was a very enjoyable night. It was a very 2 nights, I should say. Do I want WrestleMania on 2 nights ever again?
Mm-mm.
No, because the experience is WrestleMania as a day. As a whole. The thing is, what has happened in the last 7 years or so is they have felt the need to get everyone on the show, because I would say in the last 3 or 4 years, it should be more than that, because, oh, 6, but it was like, it went from like 4 hours and you had like 8 matches, including a big battle royal, but then it's like, you slowly went, we have 2 brands, we gotta get everyone on, everyone needs a big match, we need to make sure everyone has this big one shining moment. And it just stacks up the card. Now you have, because you have 2 world champions, 2 mid-card titles, 2 sets of tags, 2 women's titles. So it's like, you're already ranking up the matches there. And then, and a women's tag. And then you have, you know, the big grudge matches that you have to get in the match. And so it's like you've already, you're starting to add up, and that's 10 matches right there just in general, just off the rip. So it's like what you need to do for WrestleMania is you cut down the matches, because back in my day, kids, you had to earn your spot on WrestleMania. It just wasn't, oh my God, everyone gets on WrestleMania. You have to earn the spot. And that's what they should probably go back to, is limiting the amount of matches they have on the show. Get it down to 5 hours. Everyone can handle 5 hours, 7 to midnight. Everyone can handle it. I know, oh my God, it's 5 hours long. But that's enough. Like, you don't need it. You can go 4 hours. Like, you can get 10 matches done in 4 hours. You did it back in the day with WrestleMania 17, the WrestleMania everyone loved, and you got all the matches in, and it worked. But because you extended with 2 hours of a pre-show, with 3 pre-show matches, and then five and a half hours of wrestling, so now you're up to 7.5 hours, it's a long day, and I understand it, but it's also WrestleMania, it's special, it's different. People like the fact that you went 2 days, and you want 2 days for WrestleMania, but then you're going to officially take away TakeOver, because you cannot run TakeOver on any other night. So, like, either you sacrifice NXT TakeOver WrestleMania, which everyone considers the bigger show in terms of wrestling, pure wrestling, for 2 nights of WrestleMania. If that's what you want to do, then fine, then let's go with this format. But everyone loves TakeOver, so what do? You can't do it the week before, you can't do it the week after, it doesn't make it special. Because you're just coming off WrestleMania, and they're not going to turn, it's WWE, they're not going to go, hey, a week before we're doing this big event. Like, that's not going to happen. No, the week after, we have this big event, and it's not going to have to happen, it's going to be an afterthought. So either TakeOver does not get the WrestleMania each week treatment like it has been the last 5 years, or we keep TakeOver and have a WrestleMania day, and you just cut back a little bit. I mean, that's my thoughts, that's my opinions.
I would just say I wasn't necessarily a fan of WrestleMania being on 2 days, just because I wanted to see everything, and by everything I mean the Funhouse and the
Boneyard
in one night. While, you know, having the excitement on the Sunday all day of WrestleMania was cool, at the same time it was a little annoying, because it's like, I really want to see what this is going to be, because I was so excited after the Boneyard match. It's like, whatever this is going to be good. I know it's going to be good now. My fears have been assuaged. I'm ready for it. Give it to me. Show it to me. Wait, I have to wait 24 hours for it. Crap. Am I going to be this excited for it tomorrow? I don't know. I was.
Yeah.
So I'll be real. I was. But to me, it's like, I would just rather get it all done in one day than two. Because here's the thing about the pre-show. You can take it or leave it. You can watch it. You don't have to watch it. I typically don't sit through all of WrestleMania in the first showing, because I have to get up and move around. So it's like, I'll wait for the matches that I'm not as into, and I'll kind of get up and walk around, and I'll have it on in the background, and I'll hear it, or I'll be sitting here and watching it and kind of do something else to distract myself, to reset my brain. But I'm still...
You're still hooked. You're still enthralled. You're still going on around you, and that's what matters. That's what counts when it comes to WrestleMania. It's like, it's WrestleMania Day, because it's WrestleMania. It's a one-day event. I know New Japan did too, but New Japan could have done one night and it would have been fine, because they had the same talent working both days. So that was pointless. But I know they're trying to tell a story and whatever, but I don't know.
I mean, if we have to do 2 days now, it's fine. But I would just prefer to do TakeOver on one night and do WrestleMania on the next. Just to allow NXT to shine.
Start WrestleMania at 6. I don't care. Go early.
I mean, to me, it's like, you could reduce the pre-show.
Or count the pre-show as officially WrestleMania. Start at 6 o'clock and go, boom, here's WrestleMania. 6 to 11, 5 hours, boom. I think people would be okay with it starting early. I don't think that matters.
Yeah, but I mean, either way, it's not our decision, but wasn't a fan of the two nights, because also it's like, I had to make sure, which right now that is not a problem. Okay, let me just put that out there. But I had to make sure that I was around and I was ready to go for both nights. Now, when this is over and we are all allowed to go back out into the world, I can't guarantee that every year. And that's part of the problem. It's like, I can usually set aside a Sunday night and be like, okay, this is WrestleMania for me. I am going to do nothing but watch wrestling all day. And I can occasionally get away with it with TakeOver, where I do TakeOver and Mania back to back. But it's like, sometimes that's not always a guarantee with me. So it's like, I don't want two nights of WrestleMania. I can't guarantee two nights.
Okay, so here's the thing. for me, it's like, okay, for WrestleMania, you get geared up, you get excited. Oh, I'm going to order something cool for, like, a nice meal for WrestleMania, have your WrestleMania meal. It's like,
yeah.
I can't do that two nights in a row.
Yeah, it's like, I was conflicted because I usually do barbecue for WrestleMania. It's like, crap, what do I do for Saturday night? I have nothing for Saturday night. So, yeah, I mean, it's stupid reasons like that, at least for us. If you were a fan with the two nights, there's nothing wrong with that. Like I said, I could deal with two nights if I had to. Like, if they make the determination, hey, the show is just too big.
For
we
what?
Want to split
for
it.
Too big for just one night.
Or they feel like they can get more money by selling two nights, then go ahead, sell it, do it. Do what you feel you have to do. But for me, I wasn't particularly fond of it, but it wasn't a deal breaker for me where I was like, oh my god, this is terrible. But yeah, definitely would have liked to have seen the two cinematic matches in the same night. That being said, I kind of want all my wrestling in a cinematic setting now. I know that is way more work, but god damn, it was so good.
Well, then you'll like the kayfabe project that the girls are putting on, because that's going to be an all cinematic type thing, so maybe that'll be up your alley.
Maybe, we'll have to see, but yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed how they did the Funhouse match, how they did the Boneyard match. I felt everything else in front of the cameras and not the live crowd in the PC was fine. It was weird. But they warned us and we knew it was going to be weird, but I don't think Mania was necessarily diminished because it didn't have a live crowd.
No, it wasn't.
Like, it hurt it because you don't get the reactions and you don't get the chance and you don't get the raucousness, but it was still Mania.
It was still
good.
It was still 6.5 hours plus of Escape.
Yeah, and that's entirely what it was intended to be, was Escape. Like, you had Stephanie McMahon get up both nights and intro the show and basically be like, we are happy and proud to do this, and we hope you enjoy it. And I have to say thank you. I did enjoy it. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Yep, same.
So, yeah, and Matt makes up the great point. We all needed it. We all needed the Escape to get away for 2 days. This was great. Because it gave me something to look forward to. Now it's like, crap, I have nothing to look forward to except my birthday, which will probably be at home because nothing will be open. But
that's okay. We'll make it special.
Somehow. It's on a Saturday, by the way.
I know.
So,
Trust me, I know when your birthday is because it's your birthday and then my birthday will fall on the same days.
Oh, does that mean we can be obnoxious on your birthday?
I have to do a CB radio on my birthday.
Jobber!
That's a don't start with them. That's don't start with them.
Get Rob.
Anyway,
we got some planning to do.
Anyway, couple housekeeping notes. 8-Ball went 5-11, or if WWE 2K went 5-11, 8-Ball went 7-9. I went 11-7. You went 13-5.
Woohoo! Go me.
But that, I think that's officially 4.5 hours. A WrestleMania recap on the rack.
It was a long show, but it was well worth it, guys. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you had fun. Again, I would like to extend my thanks to WWE, to everybody on the roster, to everybody in their production department, to their video production department, everybody outside of WWE that contributed. Thank you so much for doing this show. It was well worth it. It was a wonderful escape. Keep going if you can, which I think they're going to keep going. We'll have to see. And we're going to talk about that Thursday on the Rack. Right, Rock?
Well, all the news, you can handle Tweet of the Week and an NXT recap, an NXT rundown, because you got Johnny Gargano versus Tommaso Ciampa in an empty arena match. And you have 6 women battling for the number one contendership for the NXT Women's Championship in a ladder match. Before we go, who you got, Johnny or Tommaso? Who's going to win? Who's going to win? Who's going to end it? Will be Johnny or Tommaso.
I want Tommaso to get his gold back. I don't think he will, but I want his gold back.
It's not a title match. Who's going to win? Johnny or Tommaso? Who's going to end the feud? Johnny or Tommaso?
I don't know. I feel like maybe Johnny.
I'm thinking Johnny ends it. I think Johnny ends it. And then in the women's ladder match, it's Tegan Nox, Chelsea Green, Mia Yim, Dakota Kai, Io Shirai, and I'm missing one other person in the match that I can't think of. So he goes to the NXT Twitter. Hold on.
Stall.
By the way, you can listen to us live Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. It's Rack Radio Show on Facebook, Twitter, and the Instagram. Yeah, we're also on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, you name it, we're there. Oh, Candice LeRae. That's the other one.
God, how can you forget Candice?
Anyway, who you got in that match? Who's winning? Who's number one contender?
Oh, shit. I want Candice. Candice deserves a shot.
Candice versus Charlotte? I mean...
I wouldn't complain.
I wouldn't complain. Give me Io and Charlotte. I'd be cool with that. Saturday night, midnight-ish, at CBRadio.com, GreaterThanGreatDebate.com. Sunday, if they want to talk on an Easter Sunday, they'll talk about wrestling on an Easter Sunday on Wrestle Talk Radio, 10 p.m. Eastern. We'll be back Monday night for Raw Post Show, 11 p.m. Eastern. Wild Talk Radio on Twitter, Facebook.com/Wild Talk Radio. Network. Check out the Rack Extra Reviews, Total Bells, episode one of season 5 now available. We're working on episode 2, so just stick around for that. If you have Amazon Prime, like it to your Twitch account, it's called Twitch Prime. You can subscribe for free by hitting the purple rectangle there button above the screen. Just do the thing, hit the button, follow, subscribe, you know the deal. Also, follow twitch.tv/LinsWard. Use creator code RocketSock in the Fortnite item shop, #ad, because we're a #EpicPartner. Also, that means Fortnite with Friends returns.
Yep. So, we'll be doing Fortnite with Friends on Thursday, and you know what? You can check that out, twitch.tv/LinsWard. You can also follow me on the Twitters and the Instagrams under the same name, LANSWRD. Don't forget to check out our very fine sponsor, mbgfilms.youtube.com/mbg1211. And everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. We will see you Thursday for The Rack. But till then, he's Rock, I'm Lindsay, and you've been listening to The Rack Radio Show Special Edition, WrestleMania Part 2, right here on WallTalkRadio.com. We'll see you later. Bye!
WildTalkRadio.com.